Excuse me, Your Honor. Ken Miller on behalf of Appellant Francisco Gutierrez, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. And I'd like to start off talking about the preparation to inflict serious bodily injury enhancement. It's an additional 3 levels. And a point that is made in my briefs is that that's a pretty high standard. It's extreme physical pain, protracted impairment, requiring medical intervention. And it, when you're defining that, it's good to consider it with what a mere bodily injury is, which is what happened here. An obvious injury that where you'd seek medical attention. So that's a high standard. Judge Curiel imposed this enhancement because he's found that Mr. Gutierrez prepared to carry out a serious threat of bodily injury. The government recognizes that the issue here is, was there an intent to inflict serious bodily injury? Based on Cruz's testimony, and I argued in the briefs, that it is clear there was not, because there was a fight that was stopped before there was serious bodily injury. When the bloquero said, Yatuba, everybody stopped, shook hands, handed the man back his shirt. But the thing that I would like to bring up for oral argument is the import of the video that the government lodged, Exhibit 506, H1, of the actual fight. And it adds a little bit more detail to what happened. First, if you watch it closely, at seconds 14, 25, and 35, the assailants let Mr. Cruz up, or even try and help him up during the fight. And you'll see it. If there was an intent to really hurt this man, they wouldn't have let him up. They would have smashed his head into an unforgiving cement floor. They didn't do that. They help him up, and the fight just keeps going. Second, the fight was ended. They yelled, La Tuba, 20 seconds on the video before the first law enforcement officer shows up. And I submit that's important because it shows an intent to stop the fight before there's any more serious damage, not because they have to stop the fight. And a third thing that's really important about that video is that it shows the fight lasted 55 seconds. That's important because when Judge Curiel is recounting what evidence he relied on, he talks about the fight lasting 2 to 3 minutes. Now, he's recounting Cruz's testimony, and Cruz did testify that the fight lasted 2 to 3 minutes. But it seems strange to say the fight lasted 2 to 3 minutes when you've got video evidence it was only 55 seconds. That made me question whether or not Judge Curiel had even reviewed the video, and I don't know. But the fact is there, if their serious bodily injury had been administered, it would have been an accident. That was not the intent, and I submit that is clear from the way the parties behave. And with that, I'll move on to the grouping double counting arguments. It seems plain under section 3D1.2C that where one count embodies conduct that is treated as a specific offense characteristic of another, they group. Here, bodily injury, assault and bodily injury was treated as a specific offense characteristic of extortion, they group. It should be plain. When you look at note 5 to section 3D1.2 and the example they give, where a defendant is convicted of armed robbery and unlawful possession of a gun, because the crime of unlawful possession of a gun is identical to the specific offense characteristic of carrying a gun during a robbery, they group. At one point, Mr. Gutierrez's counsel at ER 147 did object to the grouping analysis. Nonetheless, this is about as plain of an error in calculating the guidelines I submit as you can get. And the government tries to bring in this Hines case, United States versus Hines. That case is really, really distinguishable. The biggest distinction is that in Hines, the question was whether or not a gun and a threat to the president should be grouped. If they grouped them, there would be no additional punishment for the gun, and the court found that to be an anomalous result. That's not what happens here. The bodily injury gets punished either way. So the Hines case doesn't really do that, and frankly, it's kind of a reach. The flip side of this argument is double counting. And the government says, well, double counting is actually the rule, but it's Note 5 to 3D1.2 that says that this section, 3D1.2, is designed to prevent double counting of the same harm. And again, it's the same exact harm, the injury to Cruz, that's at issue in both. So that's another error. That's 4 points right there on the calculation of the guidelines. The next issue is aggravated assault, whether this should have been a simple assault or aggravated assault. That's a 1 point, that matters for 1 point, and it's frankly the same point that goes with the grouping analysis. So if you didn't go with Mr. Gutierrez on the grouping analysis, then this becomes important. If you go with him on the grouping analysis, then this doesn't even matter. But the key point I'd like to make is, if this was felony assault, it was, as the government argues, under California Penal Code 245A4, assault with force likely to produce great bodily harm. Brings me back to my original point. If there had been great bodily harm, that would have been an accident. The last point that I would like to address is the failure of Judge Curiel's failure to review the entire record. And I submit that, considering the nature and circumstances of an offense under 18 U.S.C. Section 3553A, requires that you be familiar with the offense. This isn't a guilty plea. This isn't where you have a discrete thing that the defendant says, I did. This is a trial. It's an organic whole. And to say that you're just going to rely on what the parties point out to you is to basically say that some parts of the trial aren't that important. And it's even more important in a case like this, where you have a jury returning a general verdict, yet you're going to sentence the man on a bunch of different crimes that were never found by the jury.
Counsel, didn't both sides agree to that arrangement, or am I missing something?
I think it's ambiguous from the defense side. There's never an affirmative agreement to this arrangement on the defense side, and there's a point where when the prosecutor is trying to convince Judge Curiel that he really does want him to review the entire record, he says something to the effect of, I want you to review the entire record just like defense counsel. I think it's ambiguous on defense counsel's side, Your Honor. And it could have gone either way. Because this is
but
a general...
You can't really say that defense counsel objected.
No, he did. He did. I cannot say that.
So what's the plain error in a judge not sua sponte reviewing the entire record on resentence? I mean, that's kind of a steep hill for you.
Yeah, I don't believe that it's sua sponte when the other side, and it's a really novel question, and I couldn't find any case law on it. If the AUSA is saying, judge, you have to review this, and the judge doesn't do it, are we, as the defense, now on plain error? And I didn't find anything addressing that, except that the purpose of plain error is to force people to bring up issues so the court can correct it in real time. This was brought up in real time, and it was not corrected. So, but the plain error here is a lot of what I've been going through, and it's in my briefs, and I can go through it here too, and that is the judge relied on Cruz's testimony, and he recounted it when he sentenced Mr. Gutierrez. And Cruz's testimony had a lot of problems, but it was scattered throughout the entire record. So if you're going to base, you know, whether or not this is aggravated or misdemeanor assault, if you're going to say this was an extortion that Mr. Gutierrez ordered, or that he ordered it in the day room so that everybody else could see, you're relying on Cruz's testimony. And if the court doesn't understand that Cruz's testimony was severely undermined to the point where the district judge who actually listened to him testify said, I find he's not credible, that's really problematic, because these are really close questions.
What prevented the defense counsel from raising that specific issue?
Nothing.
No. I mean, it seems to me on plain error, that's why it's a tough haul for you, because if there had been an objection, or if you say, I need to call this to your attention, that's one thing. But if you're saying there are nuances in there that he should have picked up on, that's difficult under plain error standard.
And I understand that. And that is why I started with my guideline arguments, because I think that this case should be reversed because the guidelines were calculated incorrectly. When this case goes back down, these issues can be addressed. We can say, Judge Curiel, this was not presented to you. This was not presented to you. We can also present the argument for the clear and convincing standard of proof in the first instance in the district court. So it's not a plain error issue. That argument's in there. I obviously believe in the argument, but we're in a difficult spot because it's a hard argument to make in the first instance. Second, it's plain error. So, but I think that the guidelines errors here are significant. They're sufficient. They make a big difference. Every judge who sentenced Mr. Gutierrez has sentenced him right to the middle of the guideline range. So even an offense level movement of one makes a difference to the likely sentence.
Counsel, the original sentence was 240 months and now it's 189. Assuming that we would agree with your entire analysis, what would the new sentence be?
120 to 150 months.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And with that, and that's assuming a four-level reduction. I get the three and then another one, and that's the range. And with that, unless there's any additional questions, I will reserve the balance of my time.
Very well. We'll hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mark Rahe for the United States. I'm going to start right off where counsel ended on this failure to review the entire record. Obviously, a court is only supposed to be familiar with the relevant parts of the record, not every single aspect of the record. Here, defense had 3 months between February 2019 and the actual resentencing of May 2019 to adduce whatever facts that he thought would help the client, be it impeachment or be it substantive. And the record shows that defense counsel filed plenty of papers. There is absolutely no reason why any of the points that brand new counsel on appeal is making couldn't have been raised below. And to that point, I would ask this court to look at excerpt of record page 11. Defense counsel below, during the resentencing hearing, this is a direct quote, "It has been a very thorough amount of information provided to the court, and the court has also requested us to be thorough in an attempt to obtain all the information to do this resentencing appropriately." So I don't think, and as Judge, as has been pointed out, on plain error review, there is no plain error here. Really what this is, it's an ineffective assistance of counsel claim being masqueraded as an attack on the judge, because everybody had their chance. All the court asked was that the parties bear their respective burdens of proof. And again, 3 months, there's absolutely no reason any of that couldn't be done. And as we also point out in our brief, you know, a lot of the points the defense counsel makes, Judge Curiel was aware on resentencing. The fact that Judge Gonzalez found at the first sentencing that she had problems with some of Everest Cruz's credibility, she immediately said the next breath, "But it's not the only evidence. We have corroboration here. You've got wiretap calls reflecting that Gutierrez had significant leadership. You have a wiretap or a letter from Pablo Franco saying, my friend out there, he's in charge. I mean, he's got this taken care of." And you had expert testimony that's referring to Gutierrez. So there's no reason to reverse on that point. And unless the court has further questions on that, I'll proceed to the guidelines points.
Please proceed.
Okay. Starting with the serious bodily injury, I think one point, I mean, defense counsel makes a lot of interesting points. They all would have been great in the first instance before the district court. But this court has to recall that this is an abuse of discretion standard here, and the factual findings are reviewed for clear error. That's an extremely difficult standard of review. Here, the plain language of the relevant guideline definition, I think my opponent, he kind of blurs it. He says, oh, extreme injury, protracted impairment of organs, hospitalization, those are all listed in the disjunctive. When you see that application note 1L, it says any injury involving extreme physical pain. Now, Everest Cruz testified, and this testimony went undisputed, that the Mexican mafia has different kinds of green lights. Some are to kill, some are not. He said this was not. So all this argument about, oh, well, they stopped a fight. I mean, we submitted that video. You know, I'm sure the panel's watched it. You watch it again. It probably felt like 2 to 3 minutes to Everest Cruz at the time. Yes, it was 55 seconds. But what it shows is not one, but two separate assailants repeatedly striking Mr. Cruz to the head. And at some point, he's on the ground. It even looks like they might be kicking him. He can't see what's coming. The intent needs to be to cause serious bodily injury. I don't think it's a illogical conclusion of Judge Curiel, which, again, is the standard of review here, that when two separate assailants are beating on somebody's head with their fists for 55 seconds, that there was at least an intent to cause a serious bodily injury. And remember, this is the Mexican mafia. Do we honestly think that they're going to control all the drug trafficking, all the Latin gangs in Southern California? If the idea is, oh, you know what, if you don't pay your taxes, they'll just slap you around a little and nothing bad will happen to you. This evidence speaks for itself, and certainly Judge Curiel did nothing illogical. And that's the, you know, this isn't de novo. Again, Mr. Miller's an excellent advocate. If he had made these points below, who knows, maybe the judge goes the other way. But on this record, there's plenty of factual evidence to support at least an intent to cause a serious bodily injury. And the last point I want to make on that is that this enhancement, there's a big difference between the intent and the effect. A simple example, if somebody wants to do a drive-by shooting, lowers the window, shoots at the victim, and the bullet only grazes the victim's ear, that's a de minimis injury, but clearly the intent is separate. So here, just because Everest Cruz, you know, he's a tough guy, he ended up, the pictures are there, bruises, cuts, that definitely satisfies the injury, the district court could infer an intent to cause at least extreme pain. Otherwise, the Mexican mafia, they sure wouldn't be too scary to people. Moving on to the grouping analysis. Now, grouping, and I want to make the government's point, I mean, there was no objection to the specific arguments being made on appeal. And so by that standard, to just object under grouping generically is not to say, oh, there's double counting with the bodily injury or that the group should be merged. As this court is well aware, its jurisprudence says not only is the failure to make an objection result in plain error, so is the failure to make a specific objection. And I would note that even elsewhere, at page 16 of his reply brief, my opponent even says, and this is a quote, plain error review is applied to encourage the parties to make timely objections so the trial court can correct its errors to avoid an appeal. Here, Judge Curiel was given absolutely no advance notice that this was the problem. And the first sentencing had multiple groupings as well. So with plain error review, under United States versus Zalapa, which is cited in the government's brief, the question is, this error has to be so plain, so obvious, any competent district judge should be able to avoid it without benefit of objection. And the government would respectfully submit that that high standard is not met here. First,
so
as
you're
pointing,
no,
actually, I'm not. I mean, I'm saying that there's no error, and it's certainly not plain. Because, I mean,
why there's not error? Ignoring the standard of review on this, because it would appear that there's some double counting.
Well, but again, there's double counting in this circuit, and there's impermissible. What the court says, you know, and my opponent he's got the flip side of the same coin argument. His first one is that the group should be merged. And I cited United States versus Hines as an example. I know he gets caught up on the facts of that case. What it holds as a matter of law and what the commentary to 3D1.2 says is that it basically, groups should be merged if the conduct is coextensive. Here, the aggravated assault group was for the assault of Everest Cruz in January 2011 and that alone. The extortion group was not only that assault, the purpose of which was to get the West Side Gang to pay their delinquent taxes to the Mexican Mafia. The record shows that defendant Gutierrez was involved in many other ways in extortion. He directed where the payments of taxes would go. He assigned who in the Vista detention facility would collect those taxes. And he notified inmates from outside when the amounts changed. So if we want to say what is the obvious error here, I think it's within the court's discretion, especially had this been brought up below, to say, look, this the offense conduct for both groups is not substantially identical. And on as far as the other argument, as far as counting, you know, the injury twice, the guidelines are this court's jurisprudence, even Coloza or Colaza, which my opponent relies on, says the same act can count for separate enhancements so long as the enhancements go to separate harms caused by that injury. And as you know, we argued in our brief, I mean, each enhancement has to serve a unique purpose, a different aspect of the harm's cause. The aggravated assault to Everest Cruz was purely physical, and he was the only victim of that. But for purposes of the extortion group, again, it's not an illogical conclusion from this record to say, well, they're extorting not just him, but anybody else, because it's the other people in the West Side Gang who end up repaying that tax. So you victimize, you attack him in the jail directly, but the victims are the entire West Side Gang. And not only that, this assault, for purposes of the third group, is a strictly physical harm. The government would submit it's not an illogical conclusion to say for purposes of the first group, there's both financial and physical harm because it's extortion.
But that so for that, I mean, if I recall correctly, that wasn't the argument made by the government below. Correct?
No, because this wasn't made below. You know, the probation officer.
We're faced with this circumstance, assuming, and of course, I'm not saying that plain error doesn't apply. I'm just talking about whether it's error or not. The government didn't argue a separate harm. It only argued about the harm of the physical assault. So, leaving your other argument aside, doesn't that leave us in the position where, in fact, the district court was double counting on this?
But again, I wouldn't say impermissibly, Your Honor, because we still have these other rules. Even on the most preserved record in the world, you know, I think it's 1B, one of those application notes specifically says in 1B1.1, note 4B, that enhancements under Chapter 2 are to be applied cumulatively and may be triggered by the same conduct. So here, when the district court, or first the probation officer and then the district court followed that reasoning, you're going through the separate chapters, separate parts of Chapter 2. One of those is the extortion group. Another is the aggravated assault. If I'm a judge and I'm applying that, or the court, you know, it says apply them cumulatively. I think my point is, I mean, double counting is not obvious. The only way to hash out whether it's impermissible or not is to then bring up these concerns. Well, you know, defense very easily below could have said, I think this is double counting. The judge would have said, why? Let's look at the law. So here, since there was no objection below, the probation officer and the court adopted the position that we wanted them to. I don't think it was incumbent on the, you know, the prosecutor below to lay a record for some claim that might possibly, which as it has been, be brought on appeal.
Okay. Oh, I understand.
Sorry, I thought.
No, you should. You're running out of time, so I want you to additional points you want to make.
No, I appreciate that. And I mean, I, you know, again, with the point being here on a plain error review, was there an error that was so plain, so obvious? And, you know, also to that point on the big picture, I think it was brought up earlier, you know, this defendant got a 51-month sentence reduction. Judge Curiel, you know, methodically gave him a fair shot. He went through all the record. He did not just apply the same sentence as the last time. I mean, you know, months went by. All of these arguments could be brought up. And again, you know, I just think on plain error review, if it's to mean anything, you know, a district judge should be given a chance to address these kinds of arguments in the first instance. And as far as aggravated assault grouping, I know my opponent, he basically reiterated the same points that he made, that somehow, you know, when two people beat on somebody with their fist for 55 seconds, that somehow doesn't amount to an aggravated assault. You know, California Penal Code 245 is very clear. The cases, we cite them in our brief, that felony, that felonious conduct can be supported by exactly the conduct that happened here. So, Your Honor, again, I think with the arguments raised, just I don't want to sound like a broken record, but again, even my opponent says on reply at page 11, the whole point of plain error review is to give the district judge a fair chance. Here, all the arguments that were brought to the Judge Curiel's attention were addressed, and on that level of review, we believe that the sentence should be affirmed.
Do you want to get to the preponderance issue?
The preponderance?
Yes.
Versus clear and convincing. With that, Your Honor, I think that is basically law of the case. The first appeal, United States versus Berrigan, the published case held that, you know, the extent of a conspiracy, there's a multi-factor test. The court laid that test out and said it's long been our practice that you only need to prove these facts by a preponderance when they go to the scope of a conspiracy. That should seem to be not only law of the case, but also binding simply because it's a precedential opinion. And I think we even point out in the alternative, to the extent all the evidence cited for the enhancements in this case, they came from sworn trial testimony or videos or undisputed wiretap points. So, I mean, to the extent you want clear and convincing evidence, it's there. I mean, you know, the court is basically, Judge Curiel is simply following the mandate as it came to him from the original opinion. And I think the last thing I see, I have 12 seconds. I'm not sure. I think my opponent maybe referred to the Sixth Amendment point and the special verdict. This sentence is below 20 years. 20 years is the stat max with no special findings. So there are no Sixth Amendment concerns even possible on this record.
Thank you.
And with that, I guess the government would submit. Thank you, Your Honors.
We hear a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, briefly. And it's really only one point that I would like to address, and that was the government suggested that the Mexican, and this is on the preparation to inflict serious bodily injury, and the government suggesting that the Mexican mafia would not be scary if they're really not out to try and hurt you. To that, I just want to point out again that the government pointed out that there's various levels of green lights. And the facts are what the facts are. We actually have a video of what happened, and we know that they stopped the fight. We know that they stopped it well short of anything like a serious bodily injury happening. But my bigger point is, if you lop off the arms or kill all your minions, you're not going to be able to do that much. A lot of times, you're trying to keep them in line, but you're not trying to seriously hurt them. And that is just what was happening here. And Mr. Cruz went back out on the street when this was done, and I can't remember his colorful way of putting it, but back to slinging, extorting, and beating people. So, I don't mean to make light of the serious allegations in this case, and that is not my intent at all. My intent is to say this particular setting, in this particular instance, these gentlemen are not trying to inflict a serious bodily injury. They're not using weapons that are available. If they had intended to, they could have. And if you look at the video, it is clear that they could have, and they chose not to. And so that enhancement should not apply. And with that, unless there are any questions, I will submit.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments today. The case just argued will be submitted. And we'll proceed to the next case on the oral argument calendar.